Welcome to Highly Conversational with Bentley Roman. Let's get high as a fucking kind. Enjoy the show.
So I'm here with my buddy, Thomas Dunn, Herb Hack.
Hello, hello, hello.
The pianist, the cannabis advocate, the influencer. Welcome from across the pond. If we finally get to see you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's an honor to be here. Quite the string of accolades you listed out there, but I'm just an odd chap in the UK who just looks across the pond at this legal market and has only ever dreamed of coming over here. So yeah, it's all quite surreal. I can't quite get my head around how this industry here is so real. It's thriving and it's so sophisticated and elegant already. Really inspired. Got a lot to take back to the UK for sure.
Dude, hell yeah. It's first time in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, my first proper time. I'd stayed over before in
here, let me fix this for you. I'm blinding you.
Oh yeah, no worries.
You can only see one eye. You can't trust the guy if you only see one eye.
Well, yeah. Have you seen that film 300? I just had the image of the chap at the end and his eyes being taken out.
Oh Jesus.
It looks really cool.
I haven't seen that movie in a while. I honestly want to rewatch it.
Oh, I think you should. It's one of those films, I think, that needs to be revisited like periodically, like once every 10 years or so. Because whilst some might argue it's like a homoerotic extravaganza, which isn't a bad thing. I don't know why that even is an argument, but it's amazing. It really blew me away, especially when you're high. I've not tried that, so that could be the next viewing.
Also, that movie kind of got parodied into the ground, right? It's like it was almost like everybody made a joke about 300 because it was so relevant, so popular for a while there that it almost made it cliche. But now it's been enough time. I feel like that film could stand on its own again. And a lot of people try to copy that style. Do you remember that, like the kind of gritty style and like over exaggerated, like muscular tones, like that kind of stuff?
Like a Sin City-esque.
Exactly.
Kind of
yeah.
Like, yeah. Kind of abstracted out.
So it would be cool to go back because there's a reason why people copied it. It was a solid film. That was a fun watch.
Yeah, it was, and they didn't just play with palette and color. They played with like the concept of time, right, and all these like fascinating slow mo shots.
Oh yeah, the slow mo war shots were insane.
Yeah, I think what's like the Matrix was another groundbreaking one.
The Matrix
that, right?
One holds up 100%. Matrix 2, I can do better After Effects right now in 15 minutes. But I love The Matrix 1. It's like one of my favorite films ever. And they used like actual augmented reality. Like they were on harnesses and they were actually doing the stunts. That's why it holds up. But like so much CG in too. Remember there was like 100 Agent Smiths?
Oh, what, in the playground?
Yeah, and they're like made of like rubber or something. It's just like so, it's just goofy looking now. You got to watch it again. It's so bad, man.
I think that was my least favorite, but I did remember getting excited about that massive battle at the end with the mechanized.
Oh, it was still entertaining, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched all of them, and I'm one of the biggest Matrix fans probably around. I love that. Kicked off sci-fi for me in a big way. But one is still amazing, I think. I think that movie changed the way people think even.
Yeah.
Elon Musk believes we're in a simulation. Like the most intelligent man apparently in the world thinks we're living in a simulation.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, I jump to like, oh God, that's just ridiculous. But when we think about the technological gains we've made and our ability in such a relatively small amount of time against the course of history, in like 200 years, we've come this far. Imagine what we could do in like the worlds we could create. We talk about video games a lot together. Mm-hmm. And those worlds that we've created, like they've become so much more sophisticated, right? And at what point does that become self-aware to the point that would justify a theory in which we could be in an intricate simulation? So I do see a lot of merit in it, but it terrifies the shit out of me that
this is for nothing. It's like bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a scary thought.
Yeah, in a way.
Or it already happened and it's meaningless. Like what choices we make are already made. Like that would be a sad thought as well.
It would be. Yeah.
But what's crazy, like it's so true though. Think about how much VR has even progressed in the last like 10 years. We did a silly version of VR recently. It was really fun. Tom came into town with 2-Bit Circus and did a little VR like journey thing where we shot zombies and stuff. It was pretty entertaining.
It was really fun.
But like think about even 10 years from now, it'll almost be indistinguishable from real life. And then simulations start to seem very realistic, like a realistic thing that could happen.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got such huge implications on the whole like world of I guess, of business and products and the media and the ways that we consume things. Like, it felt so epic as a child watching Lord of the Rings, the third one, The Return of the King.
Oh, yeah.
And that battle on, I think, Battle of Pelennor Fields, if you're super nerdy and you love that shit like me.
I love that movie.
Yeah. So the Rohirrim are at the top of this hill and they charge down. It was one of the most immersive things I've ever felt in my life. And then to think that in not very long, you'll be able to feel like you're on one of those horses.
Jesus,
charging down a hill towards
that.
The orcs. Like, I didn't think it was possible to be more excited and to feel more immersed, but... like, that was just dipping the toe in the water. I think, like, the children of the next generation are going to potentially have the most entertaining things possible, that you're going to be able to live your wildest dreams, quite literally.
Yeah, and then it begs the question, are we going to be buying digital goods, or are we going to be buying physical products anymore? You know what I mean? Because if you've seen Ready Player One, it's kind of, they sell, like, reality is so shitty that they're buying stuff, like, in this video game, essentially. Like, they're using their real life money to, like, improve their fake life. It's interesting.
It is, yeah. And I definitely see a lot of negative implications here and or potentially, like, worrying things that could happen. And, like, just thinking about the human brain, the psyche, like, is it healthy that we are just bombarded with dopamine, that we've become pleasure gluttons to the point in which we can't sit down and watch a 20-minute video because that's considered like a huge amount of time now. Like, that's like 20 really interesting snippets on Instagram video, or like, yeah, like 50 great memes. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's we can't be satisfied with just being by ourselves and reflecting and enjoying the moment. That is a worry.
It definitely is. We've become content addicts to an extent. I think there are positives in human connection side of things, but I think there's obvious negatives as well, where we are just disconnected from reality. One thing I've also noticed recently, at least for myself, I've been leaning towards, as somebody that was like one of the biggest film buffs ever, like I've seen most movies, like I'm a content addict myself. And I went to like film school, like it was just like my favorite thing. I love watching movies. It's like, it's kind of like learning a lot of the time because I focus on things like certain shots people are getting, the usage of sound, like stuff like that clicks. And I'm like, I wonder how I can apply that. But as somebody that loves movies that much, I'm leaning towards television series now because I want to get to know these characters so much more that like a movie almost isn't enough. So that's also something that's, I think, is strange. Obviously, a lot of people are moving to the series thing because things like Netflix and Hulu and even Disney are having their own network now, or their own streaming service. We want to have that character development and that connection to something that's not real even more, almost, if you think about it.
That's fascinating. And movies in their own way have moved towards a series model, even if it's not technically a series, right? Like Avengers, like they can't tell these intricate stories in just a 1-3 epic.
Dude, that's a really good point.
So suddenly there is a series. Like, you could argue that Marvel is all, the whole world is just one massive series.
That you have to wait longer to see. Like, you pay to see it, I guess. But that is so true, man. I hadn't even thought about
that. At what point do both collide and create just one more? Or will that happen? Like, maybe we'll go to the cinema to watch the new Netflix series of tomorrow.
Yeah, so maybe, I think there's something beautiful about going, at least I think there's something beautiful about going to a movie theater. And the experience of enjoying something with like 50 people, you know, everybody's laughing at the same time. It gives you this like energy and you're like, this is a night out. It's like totally different than watching this at home.
For sure.
And I even have like borderline like movie screen right there. And it does not feel the same, man. Like, I love the collective experience of a movie theater.
Yeah, I do too. There's so many nostalgic and really subtle little nuances and details, like the smell of the popcorn as you walk in, that really shitty, messy, like wacky colored carpet.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Yeah. You know, the obscenely priced pick and mix prices. It's all part of this experience. I don't know. You kind of buy into the good and the bad with cinemas, and it's definitely like a difficult thing to replicate.
It really is. Well, so this was our movie talk. This is why I had you here. So one thing is, usually when I have people on the podcast, this might be the first time I've met them, but me and Tom have talked about so many different topics. Even over the last few days, he's been in town. that I forgot to even really introduce who you are. So let's talk about you for a little bit.
Yeah.
We just went off on a tangent about movies, but maybe it was entertaining. I love it. I do want to talk. So Tom's a musician, one of the most talented musicians I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. And I've been lucky enough to meet quite a few I used to run an online music publication called The Eargasm. But Tom is probably the most versatile musician I've ever met. He can play like pretty much every instrument that I've seen him try to play. He picked up a 12-string guitar yesterday and he'd never played one before, and it sounded like he'd been playing it for like 20 years. So, and if you don't know him, follow him on Herbhack on Instagram. He does piano and guitar quite often, and he just jams out. And if you say a song, and if he's heard it, he can even YouTube it and listen to it. He can play it almost instantly. It's insanity. Anyway, Tom lives in the UK in Cambridge, and we've been talking for the last, what, 3 or 4 years now? 3 years?
Gosh, yeah. I think it's been, at least 3 years, you know?
Yeah, and he was actually one of the first people that kind of like inspired me to make my own personal cannabis account. So before, I was working for a lot of cannabis companies like Lynx Vapor and doing like the back end. Nobody knew really what I was doing except for the Lynx Vapor brand, you know, all the photography and video on there. And then he kind of inspired me to make my own. So I started Bentley Rolling, and we ended up like becoming, he was my first Instagram friend. I've never been friends with anybody from Instagram. And we've just been talking for years. And he finally made it over to LA a few days ago. And I just wanted to have him on the podcast. So I'm glad we're here, man.
Likewise. I'm so honored. Honestly, it's such a privilege to be out here anyway. And to make the connection in person has been awesome. We've had a wonderful time last few days. Really cool. And you flatter me on the compliments with the music stuff, and it's something that I've had as a massive part of my life that I neglected a lot because I was more interested in making money and going into the world of technology and kind of other things. But very excited about music, and I've got a lot coming up.
How'd you get started playing music?
Gosh, my parents bought a piano from an old man that lived nearby when I was very small, and the house was made up of just makeshift furniture everywhere, and they were in that phase of their lives creating a new home, a new nest. And a piano was part of the furniture. We had no musical inspiration really in the family. Nothing that I can think of as a direct example aside from that piano being there. And I just used to tinkle on it a little bit, and I didn't have a huge interest until I was maybe six. I'm saying it like that was a lifetime already. I mean, I was a six-year-old. Thought I knew it all. I saw my dad playing a piece by Elton John. I can't even remember the name of it, but it was just this beautiful little melody, and it mesmerized me. And so at that moment, I wanted to learn. And so they got me some like piano lessons and stuff. But very quickly, I liked like replicating things and copying other people and realizing that's the way I could learn to play the songs I wanted to play. But that meant that I hated like the theory and the learning side. So I took a path of just kind of freestyling and kind of improvising and copying without like a formal education. So in many ways I'm like illiterate, which has its like downsides for sure.
Yeah. I was the same way. We were talking about this in the car. Mm. I grew up and I was kind of like, My parents were like, you're taking piano lessons. So like almost out of like rebellion, I didn't learn how to read music, but I learned how to like play after watching somebody play it. I could play most things.
Right.
It was a weird, I never really learned like the traditional way of doing things because of that. But it doesn't necessarily, obviously it doesn't. Like, dude, you play, he was like serenading us last night in our family room. It was insane. It was beautiful.
Thank you. We had a really good time.
So your father played piano?
He played cornet when he was younger, and he played a little bit of piano.
What is cornet?
Cornet, it's like, that's what I said first time.
Is it like a baby piano, like a higher pitched one?
No, it's like a trumpet-y type of thing, like a brass instrument.
Huh.
The cornet. Maybe you call it cornet. My accent was terrible, but cornet.
Is it a clarinet?
No, it's like... It's a lesser known brass instrument in the pop world, but
we'll have to look it up, guys. We're gonna find out together.
Yeah, it's like a trumpet of some kind. He played that when he was a kid and then stopped when he joined the military.
Okay, so he just how did he know how to play an Elton John song on the piano?
He just taught himself a bit.
So your father does a similar thing, right? He's able to teach himself music.
I guess so. Yeah. He just never played much. He played like that, and that was pretty much it.
Who's his go-to?
Yeah,
I've got a go-to.
Yeah,
could play "Mad World" by Gary Jules, the one from Donnie Darko.
Beautiful song, yeah.
That was my first one I learned as an adult. So what happened after that? So you started playing a little more, you started copying different artists that you found inspiration in.
Yeah, and I was really quickly just attracted to patterns and like syncopation and the ability to use an instrument in different ways. For example, like adding rhythm to piano. Even if you don't have a drum or a bass or any other collaborator or musician nearby, you can still somehow create this a rhythm with the notes, and that binding of rhythm and sound can sound really interesting. So I picked up on that when I was quite young. I remember being maybe like 7 or 8 and being fascinated by that concept, and from there it's kind of evolved, and I've had different influences in that, but I've kept that like that fascination the same. And I think a pivotal moment for me was when I was 8 or 9 years old, and this chap came into the school volunteering that I was in, and he just taught me a very simple jazz scale. I think C minor or major. I'm terrible. very simple jazz scale. And he said, this is a tool, this is a foundation, this is like an alphabet, and you can decide how it works. It's like writing poetry, you're creating something new. And it just astounded me, like, that I could suddenly just improvise with these things in like a loosely kind of bonded unit. You can create some amazing sounds. And it created like this concept of keys for me that I related to, other than just squiggles on a page in theory. I hated homework. I hated all of that.
Dude, I wish somebody would have done that for me, because that's kind of how I am now, finally, like being able to try to write something, you know, for fun. It's like, once you know those keys, you can play in a world where like things, like you have to play certain keys and certain chords to be able to like make a sound that's pleasant, right? So like, knowing just what makes a pleasant sound and then being able to be creative from there is just, almost invaluable.
It's invaluable, but you don't have to feel constrained to knowing what an F sharp is.
Not verbally.
Yeah, you can know what it is in your mind and have like different ways of describing things and what makes sense for you.
That's crazy. Yeah, so that was 8 or 9?
Yeah, I was pretty young when I really found that love for it. And I've had periods of my life where I've not played much at all, like especially when I was like a teenager and I was playing a lot of rugby. That was a great fascination for a few years, and if you'd break your fingers, it was annoying.
It'd be impossible.
I
remember jamming a finger in basketball trying to play the piano.
I used to do that at basketballs all the time. If you like catch it right on the finger when the finger's like extended,
those are the worst. And your finger just gets really fat too. I haven't jammed a finger in years. I must have just figured it out. It must have been like an awkward thing, you know. You did,
you're right. In fact, there was definitely a period of my life where it would happen like
all the time,
every few months, which is a lot actually, considering you'd be out of action with that finger for like 3-4 months.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I would constantly have jammed fingers. I don't know, maybe I don't play as much basketball anymore too, I guess. So when did you start performing? You mentioned you performed at Shops, right? With
that was later on. I did a bit of like pianist work in, you know, restaurants and those kind of ambient like light jazz improvisation.
That's awesome.
Tinkling on the key stuff. But when I was little, as a little boy, I used to do the little performances that the teachers would set up or things at school. And then I joined a band when I was 16, and that was really good fun.
What kind of music was it?
It was like indie rock is probably the best way of describing it. A very loose term, I know. But it was a really eye-opening time into seeing how the music industry worked. And whilst we weren't like fantastic musically, we were very young and inexperienced as well. We learned very quickly about how ruthless it was, and how viewing it as a product that can be marketed like any other product in any other industry was really beneficial, especially for when you didn't have a lot of money behind you. It's more important then to look at it as a business, I think. And the whole like we will play and they will come approach was something we never believed in, which was really good. And that got me in the world of tech and kind of stuff I do now as one of my main projects. And
And you played guitar, right, for them?
Yes, I played guitar in the band and a bit of piano. Although piano was my first love, I got into guitar when I was about 10 or 11, and that became a fascination as well.
Had you started smoking cannabis yet at this point?
Oh, goodness, no. No, I was
really
late.
Had you even tried it?
No, God, I consider that so young. Like,
when did you try?
11. I tried it the first time when I was, I think, 17.
Wait, you started
18.
A band when you were 11?
No.
Oh.
No, no.
I was like, whoa, that's badass.
No, I was in the band when I was 16.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, when we were talking about the 11 period of, and you're talking about weed, I was like, what?
Oh, I thought when you were in a band, had you smoked weed yet?
No, well, interestingly not. And I think that would have actually helped a lot because we took it far too seriously.
Maybe, right?
We had all these rules. We weren't allowed to drink or smoke weed. And in hindsight, we didn't enjoy it as much as we should have. And I think that would have come across in the music if we'd been more relaxed around each other and not taken it too seriously from the get-go. We needed that natural spark, that natural honeymoon period between ourselves as musicians before we treated it as a commercial venture. And that's a very crucial step that we missed.
So after that, you were a session musician, right?
Yeah, I did a bit of session work. I would do really varied stuff in the studio, anything from like Southern state country track, playing a bit of like slide blues guitar or something, to like a classical piece with a singer from like Germany or something. So it would vary. And I think after that point I left it for a while. I'd only every now and again practice and play a bit of piano or guitar in my room. So it's been really nice to get back into music the last 3 years and kind of bring it together with kind of cannabis culture and cannabis culture related content.
Would you say that your love for music kind of reignited after that you started smoking cannabis again, or had you?
It certainly helped for me, yeah.
Was it after that moment, like you'd started smoking?
I wouldn't or was say it prior? Was the moment was because of cannabis.
Not because of it, I'm just curious if...
It definitely complemented it, especially when I realized that I could smoke cannabis and not just be in a state of intoxication.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the sake of it, I felt like I could do other things. I felt creative. I wanted to solve problems. I wanted to write music. I just felt a little bit more creative than I usually did. It was like a drug effect, but yeah. I had no reference point before. So it was, that was definitely an optimizer of this kind of renaissance for me personally, going back into the world of music.
I love it, man. That's how we actually first started talking, is because I caught one of your live streams.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that don't know, at Herbhack, he does these awesome live streams. And what's cool about it is he incorporates cannabis in it, but it's like, it's music focused still, but it's like you're having a session with a musician who's jamming out with you. So it's a really cool experience that you can't really get in a lot of, I don't even know where else I would have that experience really. So if you do want to have that experience, it's like you're having a conversation with your friend and smoking, and then he just jams out for a while and you talk about the next song you're going to play. And it's awesome. It's like a really unique experience, especially in the cannabis space, because most people that smoke weed aren't as open about it if they are musicians. You know, it's kind of cool to see that. And I've appreciated that recently. It's cool.
Oh, thank you. No, yeah. It's much appreciated. And I'm so grateful for all the people that join me on those live streams. It's just blown me away, the amount of interesting conversations I've had as a result, how many learnings I've had. And it's like a just completely bizarre concept to think that from my kitchen or my living room or wherever I find a piano, I can just broadcast
people around the world.
Yeah,
man.
People to people from all these different fascinating cultures and countries and backgrounds, and it's really humbling, and I really enjoy it, and it's become like almost a form of therapy for me, where I can just wind down by just jumping on a live video, and it holds me accountable to quality as well, because there's people engaging with it. And as a part of that session, I want to make it sound nice. So I'm not just gonna like play, but not mean it, and not try and convey emotion.
Yeah. So would you say you use cannabis for inspiration mostly, or do you use it for any medicinal purposes, or what's your favorite way to use cannabis, and like what's your relationship like?
I think it's become like complicated in the sense that initially I got interested in it because I used to have these quite frequent panic attacks, and mm-hmm. it was something that just happened very suddenly when I was maybe 17 or 18. All of a sudden I'd feel like periods of just like random anxiety for no apparent reason, but my chest would like close up and I wouldn't be able to like take in full intake of breath for like sometimes seemingly like weeks or months. Like I'd felt like I was constantly a little bit constrained. It was never like a few times it was, but like it was very rarely severe, but it was just constant. And I tried a few lifestyle adjustments, exercising more, not eating, you know, such bad food. Not that I was really. And yeah, cannabis, the first time I just tried it at university properly, because I tried it in Amsterdam, going back to your earlier question. Sorry, I skirted completely around that. With my girlfriend, who's now my wife, like 10 years ago almost.
Your first time was with her too?
It wasn't my first time. I tried it prior, but I wouldn't really count it because I was quite drunk already. I was 16. And my friend gave me like a blunt that was like rolled with loads of tobacco inside it as well.
It wasn't like a clean, just cannabis experience.
No, exactly. Yeah. So I wouldn't know what that was at that point.
Just fucked up.
Kind of. Everything was just a blur. just pandemonium, chaos.
So your first time was in Amsterdam?
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
That was awesome. Yeah. We had a wonderful time as well. It was really good fun.
How old were you at that time?
We were both 18.
Okay.
It was for her 18th birthday present.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. And
what'd you guys do? What was the experience like?
We just went straight to a coffee shop and just like the stereotypical tourists just gaped at all these options, just completely nonplussed, no idea what to choose, and just said, "Oh, just choose that one." It was like a lucky dip.
Did you do an edible?
No, we didn't. That was another Amsterdam story in a few years later.
What's a lucky dip?
Oh, a lucky dip. Oh, I guess what's the American equivalent? It's like something you have at like raffles or like kind of school fairs, or you might call them, where you have like...
Like a lottery of sorts?
Yeah,
a
lottery, exactly.
You just pick something like a grab bag, I guess, is another word for maybe.
We call it something else called a tombola as well, which is kind of weird. It reminds me of like Enid Blyton books. Did you ever read those?
I don't know. What did they write?
Just like kind of like nice happy things, a little like magic faraway tree. I think Br'er Rabbit. What was that?
I've read that. I don't know if that's...
I don't know if that's Enid Blyton, actually. But anyway, yeah, so another tangent.
Anyway, so what was it like? Were you guys... what'd you get? Did you smoke a joint? Did you like...
We got a pre-rolled joint.
So they sell pre-rolled joints?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a pure one, which in hindsight was far too strong, because usually they mix with some sort of alternative tobacco mix thing. Some other herbs, which I don't like very much.
Yeah, I'm not a big spliff guy. I just want the pure weed.
Yeah, and it just tastes a bit weird. And I'm not sure what like the health implications are of like combusting.
It's like smoking
that.
A cigarette, kind of, really.
Could be, right? Yeah, there's just tar residue in all flower, right? But
other herbs, not just...
Other herbs, I should have explained, like alternative mix. I don't even know what the herbs are.
Yeah.
I think there's a few that they make. But yeah, that's very common in Amsterdam. And it makes sense, because you don't want tobacco when it's not allowed in a lot of the hedge, or in most of them.
Oh, really?
No.
I don't think it's
allowed in any of them, in fact. Which is great, yeah.
It seems like European countries like spliffs a lot.
Yeah, it's very common.
Which is interesting to me. I don't understand that.
Very different. And I've enjoyed seeing the divide, because in the UK it's very much around spliffs still. I'd say 99% of the weed smoking population...
I'd be really bummed if somebody handed me a spliff and I thought it was going to be a joint. I'd just be like, God damn, I just like smoke some tobacco. I don't even like smoking tobacco. I used to, I don't like doing it.
I used to smoke a lot of those when I was at university, just because it was also economical, and it makes sense from that perspective.
To me, I had friends that did it for economical reasons, for sure. Yeah.
And it does burn slightly better, I think. And until you can refine your rolling technique to get to the point where you can roll something pure weed that's going to burn well, but... it does help with that, but the ratio varies. One thing that was really, really alarming for me was I used to feel like the tar on my lips from the filter, and in fact, it wasn't even a filter; it was just like a roach.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why normal cigarettes have all of those proper little filters in them, right? Because it's specifically designed to stop those really harmful chemicals.
Yeah, they spray on it too.
Yeah.
They like spray chemicals on.
So
tobacco.
If you don't have that with a joint that might be like, in some cases, as much as like 80-90% tobacco with a bit of weed in it, if we were particularly broke.
Well, you could also, I guess, mask it, right? So if you're smoking a spliff in public and it's illegal, that's also probably a good option, right? Because it doesn't smell like a joint as much.
I think it still just
does
smells
it,
really
yeah.
pungent.
I don't this. Smoke
Even
enough,
if it's a tiny bit, it's like a really obvious smell.
Oh, man. So what was your first time like? What did you guys do?
It was amazing. We just went to a local coffee shop, and it was one of those ones that had like a nice like lounge area where you could relax. We smoked this huge, like pure...
You can smoke it indoors?
Yes.
I've never been to
Amsterdam. Yeah. They've got like designated smoking areas, and it was really pleasant. We were sat on these nice cushions. It was nice like kind of ambient lighting and nice music, and we didn't feel anything at first because we were puffing away on this thing, like no care in the world, absolutely no idea of what was about to, you know, shatter our consciousness irrevocably. and yeah, all of a sudden, Ellie, my wife, was just like, just giggling a lot, and we both started feeling really tingly. It was like a really immersive full body high. And we were both fascinated by the fact we felt like weightless. Both our limbs were like moving up without like direction or effort. It was really, really funny. And we were just howling with laughter. In fact, I recorded a video, which I think I still have to this day, of her just like crying with laughter, just creased up at the whole experience. And we were like high for days afterwards. Like sometimes I think, oh, were you really high for like 3 days afterwards? But that time I was...
You feel that
I
way?
I felt high for several days, and yeah.
What'd you guys eat? What was your first meal of choice?
I think we actually went and got some sort of waffle or churros kind of thing.
There are churros there?
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, churros are amazing.
They're the best. It's like, those things will kill a man, but I love them.
Oh, they're incredible. Although I'm not a biggest fan of dulce de leche.
What's
which
that?
It's like this kind of very Latin American... like favorite kind of sweetener, kind of chocolate saucy stuff, and they have it with everything.
Really?
My family love it, especially my Ecuadorian family. But I've never been a fan, and they smother it across all the churros in South America.
Oh,
so
really?
I couldn't have churros there, so it was gutting.
Here at Disneyland, they have a churro stand at like every 15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it might be the most sugar addiction you can possibly have. Man, I ate maybe like 10 last time I was at...
And they're so much better when they're hot as well. They're piping
God,
hot and extra
so
soft.
Good.
Oh,
and it's just pure sugar. It's like you get that rush of sugar too. It's like it's like a drug for sure.
Oh, absolutely, it's a drug. Yeah,
especially at that dosage, you're just it's just pure sugar in different forms.
Yeah, when you think you're giving that to a child,
who's
already just like absolutely mental.
Oh my God, it totally makes sense when kids are assholes and their parents feed them like shit. You know what I mean? Like, oh, they're crashing currently.
Yeah,
because you fed them sugar all day.
Exactly, you're giving them sweets that look like they come out of Chernobyl.
They don't know how to deal with that kind of drug drug withdrawal. So, did you smoke pretty regularly after that?
No, not at all. Like, in fact, that was like a very brief skirmish into the world of cannabis, because after that, I didn't smoke for another, I'd say 4 or 5 years. It wasn't
really?
Until I was 21. Yeah, I was 21 years old, and then I was at university, and I decided to give it another try. I was just purely out of curiosity. And
all on your own, or was your friend like somebody that used cannabis?
My friend had used it a few times, but not much either. But he introduced me to it. My friend Max, fascinating guy. You might have seen photos of him. He's that powerlifter dude.
Oh, yeah.
For also
sure.
A comedian. He's fascinating. I always tease him that he was like just the reason, he was like the catalyst enabler for me becoming a stoner.
He was the one.
He's the one. It's him.
It's on record now.
He couldn't even roll joints at the time. He had to get his girlfriend to roll us a joint.
Really?
It's tragic. Yeah.
She was great at it.
She wasn't even great, but she just knew the basics.
She could achieve.
Yeah, and we used to make these kind of tea bag looking things ourselves. It was really bad, but it
like
wasn't
a joint that looked like a tea bag.
Yeah, like sometimes they were that bad. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, dude. The first time I tried to roll a joint, we were so young that we didn't have joint papers. Like, you couldn't go buy them necessarily. I think I was like 17 or 16.
Mm.
And we tried it with computer paper. And it was like the worst thing I've ever smoked in my life, dude. It was
just
like
normal paper then, writing paper.
Yeah, but like the stuff that comes in a printer. Like,
that's gross.
It's even thicker, you know? And it's like, it was like smoking pure fire. It might have been like the worst fucking idea ever. And then the first time I tried to roll a joint, I still didn't know how. I was in South Padre, which is like the worst place on the planet. If you're from South Padre, I'm sorry. It's like spring break capital, but like cheesy spring break. Like the one that you imagine from like MTV in like the early 90s.
Okay.
Anyway, we went there. The guys at the club were wearing their shirt totally unbuttoned with stunner shades on. Like it's at night, you know? Like it doesn't make any sense. It's spring break specific. Anyway, got the worst weed I've ever had. Mm. And then I tried to roll a joint for the first time. It was so bad, man. I don't even know if it was... We got maybe like 3 hits before we ended up just like quitting on this thing.
It's rite of passage though. You need, it's really like fulfilling to then be able to roll them.
Oh
nicely,
yeah, man.
Right?
It feels like you have a superpower because in any scenario you can smoke, and most of the time if you can't roll a joint, you're like, okay, what are we going to make a pipe out of? And you have to like become MacGyver and like try to make a pipe out of an apple or like a pen or something.
Oh yeah, I've made pen pipes, apple pipes. I've used a few different types of fruit. I did the Starburst thing.
Oh, that looked cool. I wanted to try that.
It's cool for like one or two hits.
And then it tastes terrible.
Well, it's not even the taste. It's just the way that it's gummy sweet. It's going to get, you got a lighter on that. It's going to melt and it's going to close the airflow passages. So I find that it just like fuses everything together with the flame, which is kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So it's more of a one hitter novelty extravaganza.
Just for fun.
Yeah, for the gram. Yeah.
Yeah, for the gram for sure. So when did you start smoking? Right when you met your friend, obviously. But like,
yeah, university. 21 years old I was.
And you just
21.
You started and never stopped? Or was it a
pretty
slow
much,
grow?
Yeah, pretty much. I was suddenly just like many things in my life, when I realized there was more to it than just surface level intoxication. And that there was this whole subculture and like all these fascinating use cases of and examples to me of people who were doing extraordinarily successful things with their lives. Whilst having cannabis as part of that life. And that was like defied everything I'd ever been brought up on. I had a conservative viewpoint on it growing up as like a Catholic boy. It just blew my mind. Like that all those like debunkings of this fallacy that I'd grown up believing. And I was suddenly very excited about it. I was doing nonstop research and looking at who are the influencers in this space? Who are the people with opinions that I would listen to, and I was reading books about it, and realizing very quickly as well that this is a very, well, at that point especially, it was a very virgin rainforest kind of market. It was Wild West. I know that's terms used for any new market, but it really was.
It really is,
the United States at that time not having recreational legalization anywhere at that point, in fact.
Yeah.
Still very new. I forget that now.
It's only
been in California.
Years, yeah.
So yeah, basically toe in the door, and then I was suddenly just like sucked right in.
When was, do you remember, I specifically remember a moment, I don't know if it was the first time, but like, do you remember the first time you smoked weed alone? Because I think that's a, kind of a rite of passage to being like an actual cannabis user. Like you're not smoking with your friends, you're not doing it socially, you're doing it for like, to learn more about yourself, you know, like something like that.
That is so true. That's a really underrated moment. That's a moment as well I don't reflect on enough, because that was a massive deal. You're right. There was a social stigma of, you know, if you're at a party, it's okay because it's like this collective, just like light experimentation without, you know, without that stigma. But then alone, it's like, oh wow, you're not doing it with friends. People would question that as well.
It would be like, oh, I never smoke alone. Like people would say that, you know.
Yes, they do.
And you'd be
exactly.
like, well, why not, man? That's like when you learn the most about yourself.
Exactly. I felt ashamed to say that I used
to
like just smoking by myself and then going to do something, reading a book or do something creative. But I felt ashamed for quite a while.
There was a stigma for sure about that.
Mm.
People forget. Now it's like everybody smokes. Well, especially in the world where a lot of people can communicate with the world by themselves still, like with social media.
Yeah.
I think it's made it maybe even more acceptable. But like, it really was something. Do you remember your first moment when you did, or a moment where it was like...
I can think of like a series of moments. I'm not sure which was the first, but it was in my university room and... I was sat on my bed. Oh, it was a fucking horrible bed. It had all these springs sticking out, and like, it was a really, really crap bed. But I was sat on this lumpy, uncomfortable bed, and I rolled an awful ratio joint, maybe like 60% tobacco and then 40% cannabis, which is pretty standard in the UK. And I remember being so high. I think it was the nicotine as well, because for some reason it gives me like wobbly legs and gives me a huge like rush. Tobacco.
Yeah, especially if you hit it like a joint, man.
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely gets you.
And I just puffed away at this thing, and it was far too intoxicating for me to enjoy. And like, so that, I think that was my first experience.
So what did you do?
Myself.
Did you just like lay there?
I lay on my bed, and I just had to go online and just research, like, am I dying? You know, the classic.
Yeah.
You know, symptom test that always comes back with like, you're gonna die in a day.
WebMD.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, terrible, terrible thing to do. For the most part, I think it's got its positives. But I just Googled lots of things. And then once I had the hard realization and fact that nobody's ever died from this, I thought, okay, like that does change this dynamic a lot. And a bit later on, I started playing a computer game to take my mind off it. And I felt so immersed in the game.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, okay, now I'm really enjoying this time by myself. And it was just idiocy. It was just too high a dosage. I didn't know what my limits were yet.
Yeah, like, of course. There
was no rule book for me. There was no guide. And I had to figure that out the hard way, as does everyone, I think. But that was the first time.
I had a similar experience. I think it's really interesting, though. Like, I think you get higher when you're by yourself, or you're more conscious of how high you are.
Because yes, that's a good point.
When you're high with somebody, you're having this collective experience where you're having a conversation. Mm. You're constantly keeping each other's minds off of the fact that, like, you're quite altered right now.
Yes.
And when you're alone high, or especially early on, you're like... nobody can see my eyes are just wide open, but you're just like, holy shit, like, this is a different experience. And it's also, especially early on, you're like, you almost feel like you're doing something a little wrong by being high by yourself. It's like fun experience to like see what that's like and what you do, and not, it doesn't really matter what the group wants to do, you know. A lot of the time it's like a group choice to be like, let's go do this. It's like the first time you get to experience that high
point,
by yourself. And just like, let your ridiculous mind do whatever it wants to do, and like, go do whatever you want to do. Listen to whatever you want.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way of putting it. It's just quality me time. And that's such an important thing, not to have those constraints of social pressure.
Yeah, man. Eduardo from Lobo Canagar. Mm-hmm. I've said it a couple times now. He always likes to say it's like a conference room meeting with yourself, like when you smoke weed by yourself. And Ricky Williams said the same thing in a different way. Mm. Like, a lot of people like see it that way now, as more of a meditation for getting to know yourself, maybe what you're doing wrong and what you can improve about yourself. And it's just a really interesting... It's a definite medicine in that sense, I think.
I agree. I think that's such a tying bond with all of the stories I've heard of people who got into cannabis, that it adds that another perspective, right, internally, right, and it slows things down in order to make things easier to reflect on, at least for me personally. And that's a really useful thing for me, because my mind just races so much personally from one thing to another. And I've never considered myself ADD or anything like that, but maybe just our entire generation has a short attention span, but I really struggle with concentration, and it helps tremendously. If I can get into the zone and it's the right type of strain and dosage, then yeah, it's a wonderful tool.
I think you and I are really similar in that sense, because I use weed to like almost turn it off enough for me to like be creative and be inspired, because my thoughts just race, man. Like, I can't sleep at night because I'll just keep fucking thinking about projects, or like maybe some stupid superficial worry for about the next day that
anxiety, just a white noise in there, you know? Makes it so much worse as well, right? If it's happy, excited thoughts, it's different, but if there is anxiety, and it makes the whole process so much more of a burden.
Absolutely. And then the moment I take like maybe a hit or two, I've said this so many times, people are getting tired of it, but I feel like I imagine what everybody else's baseline is, or a normal person's baseline. And then Ricky Williams goes, maybe normal isn't what we are. You know what I mean? Maybe that's just not even something to seek. Maybe normal.
That's a great point. Yeah,
maybe it's just some people fit in that and some people fit in a different perspective. It was really interesting. But yeah, it just makes me feel what I want to feel like, I guess, is normal baseline. Is just being able to like, and to interact with the world in a positive way.
You know what? That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a very personal thing as well, right? I think everybody has their own way with cannabis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry.
You just totally faded out there,
just,
man.
Yeah. It was just the thought just sent me off in an exploration in my brain, and I zoned out on you.
See, the weed's working.
It is. What was it that we smoked today?
We're smoking some Orange Cream by a company that hasn't dropped their flower line yet. So unfortunately, I can't talk much about it. But it's a wonderful strain.
Super secret exclusive weed, even better.
It'll be out soon, and then we'll talk about it maybe on a later podcast. I'll tell them about it.
Sounds good.
But it's great. I like Orange Cream. It's a good indica dominant, hybrid, but it keeps you able to like stay creative and talking.
Yes, doesn't, I've noticed that.
It's just relaxing.
A bit puzzled by the effects because yeah. I was feeling an indica vibe, but still feeling able to get shit done.
Exactly. And that's kind of the strains I like to work with because it kills the anxiety, but I can still do work. Mm. And that's, or just a straight hybrid if I want to work out. That's what I generally do. You like sativas more though, right?
Traditionally, I have, yes. And I think it's partly because I just haven't had much experience with a wide range of indicas like the sativas I have. Mm-hmm. I've just been drawn to sativas because I was really adamant that I needed something that was the most energy-inducing and didn't really think about hybrids as much either for mm-hmm. a while. But then I found that hybrids are my like preferred.
Yeah, for sure. Hybrids are the best, yeah. really. Especially if you find a good one you like.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I like a sativa sometimes, but for some reason, just that an indica makes is like just a total anti-anxiety for me, and it just makes me be able to just be normal.
But if a little bit more panicky with sativas, I must admit.
Some of them, yeah. for sure. Mm. But oh yeah, this is what I was gonna say. Sativas, though, generally speaking, are more attractive and have like a more funkier scent, and it's like okay, this is. And back in the day when I was buying it in an illicit market, it'd be like that would be what I'd gravitate towards because I thought it was like the dankest, you know. Mm. But a lot of indicas are understated and they have more of like an earthy scent. So it's like, it's interesting because the appearance really is deceiving in a lot of ways. So I was leaning towards strains that would make me more anxious prior to entering a legal market. And then at one point, as I told you before, I was smoking sativa and indica and using them for different things. So the indica hit me so much harder. But now that I'm exclusively smoking hybrid to indica, and indica doesn't like knock me out like it used to. It's kind of interesting. It's all perspective.
Yeah, and tolerance as well, right? You
probably, yeah, that too. I wouldn't even thought about that. Mm. So what have you thought? So Tom, this is first time in LA. We yes. took him to a grow op at the Pottery yesterday, which is a great dispensary. We had a good time.
So good.
What did you think of your first of all, what did you think a grow op was going to look like? Obviously, you've seen maybe some pictures and stuff. What were your expectations? What'd you see? What'd you think?
I think it met my expectations in terms of what it might look like, but I was just so, I had no control of my emotions. I was so thrilled. I was so excited. I'd only ever seen like illegal little tiny home grows in the UK. And I'd of course seen many things across the pond on Instagram of like all these fascinating grows, but it never seemed real. And it was always just like framed in this ideal that it was in another world, just so far away from the UK. And so to actually walk into that room and see the flowers and brush against them a little bit, I know we weren't supposed to.
You just incriminated us, man.
It was just amazing. And it just, I was just blown away. It flew by. I could honestly have spent all day in there taking
Absolutely,
photographs.
Man.
It was, yeah.
Next time you come, we'll have to do an all day thing. We could go see. And isn't it weird to see the different strains? That was something that resonated with me a lot.
Yes.
To be able to see them side by side too, and just growing and head high, like they're so tall.
Yeah, exactly. That seeing that full spectrum in production and cultivation was just fascinating. As some were so dark, the leaves themselves were almost black, and then across there'd just be a row of like beautiful green, orangey looking monsters. It was just wild.
It's like Willy Wonka, dude, for weed.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it so much. I don't think I'll ever get used to it, man. Like I'd never seen that until I was older, and now I don't think I'm ever gonna get used to it. I love it so much. And I don't know if you believe in like an energy and things, but like I really feel an energy when I'm in those like grows, because there's so much living life around you that's also probably producing oxygen, I imagine. And it's just like something, I don't know. Cannabis is such a powerful plant in comparison to most plants. You know, it has such an ability to change your perspective and it's just kind of cool to see it all right there.
I'm very excited just being so inexperienced with this as well, with like the actual cultivation and farming side of things, because it just means I've got this whole world now that I've got to look forward to, and I'm going to be coming back more. I'm going to be seeing more of these things and learning more. And that's just thrilling, that idea that, this is just toe in the water stuff. I've got so much more.
Yeah, man. About that is so true.
And see,
I love it. And like, what's interesting is I've had the opportunity to go to a lot of different grows, and each grow is kind of set up differently. Everybody's doing it a little differently. Their flower looks different. Like some stocks grow a certain way at certain places. Some strains do really funky things. It's just like an endless it's like an endless amount of surprises with, if you really enjoy cannabis, like there is an endless amount of visuals you can see of a strain. Like they all look so different from some of the hyper zooms I've done. You can see how much different they even look from a close up perspective in between just something that might even be just a slightly different cross or even the same strain. Mm. A lot of the time, the same strain from the same person will grow completely different a second harvest. It just has a unique expression. It's just, it's something I find so beautiful. And it just makes me happy to be in a room where there's just so much. It's basically art too, because the cultivators are so talented.
And we've got that bias of creating content in the cannabis space, right? So we might have an extra appreciation.
Oh, definitely.
Regardless of that, being in this subculture where you appreciate weed, like, isn't it funny that like many millions of people around the world appreciate so much this one particular plant's aesthetics and looks and smells? Like, if it wasn't for the effect that it gave you, like, and you just saw it was just a normal plant, it'd just be like an annoying weed, wouldn't it? Be like, this is just some nasty shit, really. It's just
absolutely,
you're not going to have that appreciation, but just understanding it, and then it adds to the aesthetic and the appeal, I think. Which is crazy, right? I never thought I'd care about the orange hairs on a little nug of weed. What a bizarre, weird, sad concept, but I love that.
But dude, now, like, if you think of it now, there's like the I think one of the coolest things about cannabis is the same seed can become like swag or shitty weed, or
swag.
We call it swag is like bricked together shitty weed. Basically.
Okay, like brick weed, yeah.
Or it can become like dank weed. It can become like a beautiful cola, and that's the only difference really is like nurture. So to me, that's so crazy because it does become something so much more beautiful and alien when you do nurture it. That it, I think, it is something you can appreciate, and even people like. Like, my mother appreciates it, and she doesn't really care that much about, like, cannabis, like, what it looks like. But, like, being able to see that live cola because of the nurture that's gone into it, it has such a unique expression. But if it's just shitty weed, it kind of all looks the same, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of cool to see. That's something I've always appreciated, I guess. And I think people that aren't connoisseurs are starting to be able to see it a little more as this higher quality stuff that's coming out. They get to see just the unique differences.
Exactly, yeah. The content's catering for that. It's like very much a medium in which people can appreciate the cannabis plant, and they're still like you're doing with your hyperzooms, you're, you know, adding new ways, creating new ways for people to understand and learn about the plant. That's really valuable and important for the industry as a whole if we're going to become more sophisticated and for it to become integrated into our lives. So yeah, I'm digging those hyper zooms.
I appreciate it, man.
Really, really cool.
It's been really fun. I just like looking at it close up, really. So it's been fun for me. So maybe we tell everybody what we're about to go do. It's about time to head out. Me and Tom are about to go to a 420 High Times live stream.
Oh, yes, we absolutely are.
And he's going to be doing, I guess, after this, it may not be there, but you should check out Tom afterwards at HerbHack. He does similar live streams all the time. But we're going to he's going to go play some music for everybody over on High Times. So we got to, unfortunately, cut this to an end. But I'm so happy you finally got to make it over here.
It's been a
man.
Pleasure. I just feel like I've got so much more to catch up on. It's been really good fun.
We got to do this again when you have a little more time.
Thanks
for
having me.
We were having way too much fun. I would love to tell people you have a new album out on Spotify, right? People
can
check out.
All the streaming platforms like Apple Music, Spotify, whatever you want. It's just type in HerbHack and it will be called Live Piano Session, and it's a bunch of classical pieces that I've been writing in different phases for quite a few years now. So I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think.
And then where can they find you?
Oh, on Instagram is probably the best place, and Facebook.
And that's at HerbHack.
At HerbHack, yes.
HERBHACK.
Yeah, like Life Hack, HerbHack.
Hell yeah. Dude, I'm glad we got to do this. Thanks for
coming. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Subscribe for more. You got a joint? It'd be a lot cooler if you did.